This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Emergency medical services. It's something we hope we never have to use, but it's a service many depend on in times of crisis. And for rural residents who can live miles away from the nearest hospital, ambulance staff or other first responders can literally mean the difference between life and death. But emergency services in these areas are facing more challenges than ever, with fewer workers or volunteers and limited funding. Joining us to talk about these issues in light of Rural Health Day this week are Shali Pittman, Communications Coordinator for the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health, Amanda Bates, Education Director for the Wisconsin EMS Association, Tom Hall, Rusk County's Emergency Management and Ambulance Director, and Kirk Gunderson, a paramedic from Osseo and President of the Wisconsin EMS Association. Kirk, I wonder if you could start in broad strokes describing, you know, what are the biggest challenges facing rural emergency medical services right now?
Well, it's a pretty big broad stroke. As you start to look at the problem, when you look at the overall state, about 60% of the state of Wisconsin is covered by volunteer EMS. And as we all know, whether it's an EMS, whether it's the fire service, whether it's local cleanup day in the community, volunteerism as a whole is down. And for so long, and for such a great area in geographical area of the state of Wisconsin where we depend on volunteers, staffing services day in, day out, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year becomes a real challenge for these people.
And I wonder, Shali, you know, are these new challenges facing rural emergency medical services?
You know, we find in rural areas, rural EMS face unique challenges that are a little bit different that those in cities face. We're used to thinking of EMS. You know, we pick up the phone, we dial 911, and we expect two qualified medical professionals to show up at our door, right? And I think that's what everyone kind of has in their mind when we think of EMS. But that's a bit harder to do in rural areas. You know, there are volunteers, first of all. There are volunteer services. There are longer transport times to get to those rural areas. And things are just a little bit different than you would think of in cities. So we started these listening sessions in around the state to kind of get an impression of what the state of rural EMS is.
Yeah, and I want to talk more about the listening sessions that the Office of Rural Health has been having later in the show, but I wonder if we could kind of dig into, you know, what these rural EMS services look like around the state. You know, I wonder, Tom, if you can talk about, you know, what do EMS services look like in and around Rusk County?
In Rusk County, we have 4 911 ambulances and then another rig just for backup, and if we do an occasional transfer at the basic level. We are a basic service. We're paid on call, paid per call, so we're not truly volunteer, although what they get paid is much less than a full-time would get paid. So these people are at home. We have no full-time staff other than myself at this time, and there's about it varies, but around 35 to 40 EMTs that try to fill those four schedules. Plus, we use EMRs to supplement that, which we have three or four of those also that fill in some shifts. So that's kind of what we're doing here right now.
Yeah. Kirk, as someone who's you know, pretty familiar with different systems, you know, around the state, I wonder, you know, how maybe Rusk County kind of compares to other counties in western Wisconsin or other areas in the state.
Rusk County is probably the norm when you look at the state. When you look at the fact that the majority of the calls and over 40% of the population in the state of Wisconsin is covered by approximately 12 services, that means that the majority of the state is going to be covered by services just like Rusk that are facing this struggle for staffing, for funding, for making sure that next shift is covered. And it's a continued struggle. It's only going to get worse.
Has this been the norm to have, you know, to have this kind of large areas being covered by, you know, a few volunteers or a small service?
No, I would say, you know, I've been in this business of EMS since 1986 when I started out as a senior in high school, and I spent the first about 12 years of my EMS career as a volunteer first responder and EMT for our local service, very similar to what Tom's describing, which was a municipally owned service, paid on call, paid per call. But like Tom said, I think when I first started, I think I got for an 8-hour shift, I think, if I remember right, it was somewhere around $10.25 for the entire shift. You're not going to get people that are going to do this for a living and make a career out of it. Since that has transpired, and as EMS has continued to grow, the expectations when you call 911 and what shows up at your door by the consumer has not changed. But however, the demands placed on these people that are doing it, the training, the staffing, the continuing education, which are all extremely important and not things that we can cut, because people expect and deserve, the patient deserves a standard level of care that's going to show up at their door. And as those things continue to evolve, it has continued to be an increasing problem for services across the state to take care of.
Yeah, Amanda, I wonder if you could provide some context, some insight into, you know, the average kind of training and continuing education that, you know, an EMT, a volunteer, you know, whether that's firefighter, paramedic, on an ambulance service, you know, what they have to go through.
When you join a service, most of them will ask, hey, do you have an interest in fire or you just want to do straight EMS? Most services can provide some sort of assistance to help pay for that training, but there are still some services in Wisconsin that cost falls back on the volunteer. Just starting out at for an EMR, I think it's 80 hours that they need for initial training now. EMT all the way up to 160 hours. So that's after work. That's actually finding a campus that will have that class offered. Some parts of the states, they actually cancel class. Maybe they'll have three people register, and then, you know, because the tech schools aren't filling the seats and it's just not cost effective for them to teach those classes to three people, they end up canceling those classes. So then those services can't even get their people trained. You know, if they want to go up to a paramedic level, I haven't heard of any smaller service that is helping pay for the cost of paramedic. That is very expensive to do and very time consuming. That is kind of your life basically stops for 9 months and you don't focus on anything else other than passing paramedic. That literally becomes your life. There's huge cost for that. There's a lot of ride time and there's a lot of clinical hours that are required for that certification. Those are all outside of if you wanted to become a firefighter. There's Fire One, and again, that's a weekend course, or that's two nights a week course for 3 hours away from your family, away from your other job. And sometimes that's offered by the department on site if you're lucky enough. Other times that's meaning that you have to drive to the nearest technical college, and if they have, again, enough people who sign up to take that course, that they do offer that course. So I have heard conversations from around the state that departments are still waiting to have their people trained.
Yeah, and Amanda, I wonder how much of that, you know, those requirements that for training and for continuing education, you know, how much that can be maybe a barrier to, you know, getting volunteers on these services, or even just you know, a deterrent for having people volunteer or work in this field.
Sure, especially when you have to have those costs picked up maybe out of your pocket, and then at some point you can be reimbursed by your department for fulfilling those courses, and also paying for the textbook and the gas to get there and your dinner, and that can be a huge determinant. Maybe somebody who wants to volunteer, I got this extra time. I would love to help out my community. I love where I live. My roots are deep. But I just cannot afford to take this class. I cannot afford to pay $350, $1,200. I just can't do it. That's a deterrent. Then they see that, oh, well, now that I've made it here and I've passed these classes and I've passed the NRE team exam and I'm ready to go, well, now I have to keep up my license, and we don't really have a great training department at the program, but now I have to find outside educational sources, so, and my broadband isn't good, and now I can't get online courses for the flexible credits, and now I got to go somewhere, and then that's more money for them to fish out and find continuing education credits that are another state requirement to keep your license. So it's tough, and then I'm speaking on behalf of myself as a paramedic. It sometimes can be tough to find refresher credits.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about the challenges facing rural emergency medical services. We're here with Amanda Bates, Education Director for the Wisconsin EMS Association, Charlie Pittman from the State Office of Rural Health, Tom Hall, Emergency Management and Ambulance Director in Rusk County, and Kirk Gunderson from the Wisconsin EMS Association. So as we mentioned earlier, Shali, you know, the Office of Rural Health has been holding listening sessions around the state this year, including in Bosco Bell and Arcadia in western Wisconsin area. You know, I wonder if you could talk about a little bit about the purpose of those listening sessions.
So the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health assists on projects, and we work with partners on EMS and EMS policy. And, you know, we wanted to get a better sense of the issues facing rural EMS. I know Amanda just highlighted an overview of them, but there are many. And so we wanted to actually go out into the field and listen to folks who were boots on the ground and wanted to hear their concerns and ideas for solutions as well. Both to inform our office and also to turn that over to policymakers and legislators down the road. Now, there's a little bit of a sense that policy in rural areas, you know, policy is set by those in cities often, and people kind of forget that the situation that's the case in cities isn't the situation in rural, and that's definitely the case in rural EMS. You know, as I've mentioned before, rural EMS faces different challenges. You know, EMS in cities is often paid professional paramedic services with short transport times to a hospital. And in EMS, you kind of have the inverse. It's often volunteer-based, EMR all the way through EMT to paramedic, with longer transport times to longer distances to hospitals. Even if you make it to one hospital, if it's a small hospital, you might have to get a transport service to a larger hospital. So the idea behind these sessions, we've had five so far in Arcadia, Spooner, Woodruff, Econo Falls, and Bosco Bell, attended by those in the community and also surrounding communities and counties even, is to get a general impression of the state of rural EMS and to find some solutions. And so we're just kind of in the fact-finding phase now, but we will be publishing a report probably in the winter, upcoming winter, and we're also putting together a highlight reel of straight from what people have, rural EMS have said. You know, these are the issues that that we're facing, and I'm happy to kind of you know, I just went through and we recorded all of these sessions, and I just went through and watched them yesterday again, and it was the first time. And you know, there are so many different areas, you know, that we can go down. You know, while each service is unique, there were definitely some issues that seemed to be affecting services across the state. So,
yeah, I wonder if you could highlight maybe some of, we've been talking a lot about the things that are similar between EMS services or EMS, but, you know, what are some of the different areas, you know, maybe some areas of differences that you heard in, say, Spooner versus Bosco Bell? You know, are there different needs in different parts of the state?
Absolutely. You know, well, the one that jumps out to my mind is we're in the Northwoods for a couple of these sessions, and we definitely heard that there were times where people in the North maybe felt like they weren't represented, you know, when policy was actually getting written, you know, right here in Madison. And so one of the things that's different is Well, there are all sorts of things. There's volunteerism, there's staffing, there's funding that are all, you know, different in rural areas. There's also the issue of licensing and standards and, you know, even broadband. You think about rural areas in the Northwoods, and broadband is a huge issue. We, you know, and you know, all of these things are interconnected. You know, what's a rural issue is also sometimes a rural EMS issue. So in terms of economic development for rural areas, you know, broadband is very important. But it becomes a rural EMS issue when you need to do training to keep your license, right? To become an EMR, an EMT, or a paramedic, and then to continue to keep that license, right? So, you know, you need a physical, you know, computer connection, and sometimes that can be really hard to find. Another flip of the coin with broadband is if you're in an ambulance, if you're, you know, doing a transport, if you're taking someone to the hospital, sometimes it can be really difficult to even connect to a hospital because there's no cell service for large portions, and that becomes not just an EMS issue, also it's a public safety issue. You know, it's you know, these are people's lives that we're, you know, putting in their hands. EMS folks, rural EMS, are putting in their hands, and you know, that's an issue that those in cities, in more urban areas with more access to broadband, wouldn't even think of.
Tom, as someone who is very much a stakeholder in these conversations, I wonder if there are things that you feel like maybe aren't talked about enough when people are looking at the issues facing emergency medical services.
Well, I think over the last really 10 years, I've been in EMS about as long as Kirk has, and didn't see it in the first years, but there's been a real move to move the EMT basic, EMR, everybody. The training has gotten to be double the hours. We're moving them toward a more professional training, but in the rural and super rural areas where we don't have a big population like a city or even a rural area that's got a large population, my county population is between 14 and 15,000, I have to train people that already have the jobs here in the county, so I don't really have a lot of people that are looking to do this for a job unless I pay them more than everybody else. So the pay to match the professionalism is something that's happened in fire and at the paramedic level, but it really hasn't trickled down below that very much.
I wonder if you could explain for people who aren't familiar with this area, you know, who is setting the standards that these, you know, EMS folks are having to meet? I mean, are these oftentimes national standards, or, you know, are these state standards?
If you're asking me, the state of Wisconsin, as I think everybody on the phone knows, uses the National Registry of EMTs for their testing. So the curriculum is, I believe, still DOT, that follows a Wisconsin standard, but the testing is done by the National Registry. So in order to do that, you have to reach a certain competency with your students to make sure they can get through that testing process and be licensed at the level that you wish them to be at. I know our local technical college here has done a lot with putting out lecture portions on the web so that people don't have to travel long distances to sit and listen to the lecture portion. We just gather them together more for the hands-on portion. That saves them. Amanda or one of them was talking about the cost of travel and the cost of meals and things like that. At least we keep them closer to home that way for one night a week.
Kirk, I wonder if this is this issue of, you know, having higher standards for EMS workers or volunteers and not necessarily having the compensation to, you know, match that. Is this an issue that you've heard in other services around the state?
Well, it certainly is an issue that comes up, Hope, when any time that you have these listening sessions or you're talking about the services that are struggling, one of the concerns that they have is about the training and the standards. Wisconsin, fortunately, has, for the most part, been on the forefront of having a well-respected level of care that is afforded the end user, the patients that we respond to day in and day out. And I don't think that anybody that is out there wanting to respond is looking to cut that level of care. What we need to do, and what one of the benefits as we go forward with this, is looking at how we can come up with out-of-the-box thinking, whether it's for this training that we're going to provide. You know, one of the things that WMSA has done to help its memberships is offer a member discount through an online continuing education curriculum that meets the Wisconsin Flexible Education and the recertification process. So those that are in Rusk County, those that are in the northern tier of the state of Wisconsin or any of the area, they can stay home, they can do the online modules. My first responder units here in Osseo just recently completed all of their refresher all online. The medical director came by, did our skills checkoffs, and they never left town other than our normal training nights. They stayed home and they did it all right there. And you, trying to think of out-of-the-box systems and solutions to come up with answering this training need without lowering the end deliverance of care and the quality that the patients, when they call that 911, what they expect. Because whether you're in Ladysmith, Wisconsin, or you're in downtown Milwaukee, when someone calls 911, they're going to expect the same level of care and competency on certain standards, and we need to figure out a way to continue to provide those, which we've done successfully so far. Unfortunately, we haven't flexed as fast or as often as we need to. And one of the challenges, there's a lot of pride in the volunteer service, and part of that is thinking out of the box and how we can continue to provide that.
Amanda, what do you think has been the driver behind, you know, just increasingly kind of upping the standards for EMS staff?
Medical science. Oh, Shelley?
Oh, I'm happy to step in here as well, because we heard a lot about standards at these listening sessions. You know, medicine is getting more complex. Ask any, you know, physician or nurse. And don't get me wrong, new life-saving procedures are wonderful. But raising standards for EMS also means more training, more licensing, on top of the work that EMS is already doing to answer calls. And so we heard at these sessions that putting more and more burden on folks, more training and more licensing means more cost and to learn new techniques, and that comes at the expense of work, at the expense of family, at the expense of just being a person in the world. And, you know, those licenses, you know, as I mentioned, cost money. So sometimes that can be the straw that leads people to quit. And so we're faced with this conundrum where we want to maintain the standards, right? We do want the same quality of service if you're in downtown Milwaukee versus if you're in rural Wisconsin. You do want to be able to call, you know, 911, two highly trained medical professionals show up and are able to administer life-saving care. But it's the situation is different in rural areas, because maintaining standards or keeping standards or raising standards also means asking more and more of volunteers, or even for folks who are paid. They're not paid, you know, that much often. So it means you know, a lot of sacrifice just to maintain those licenses and keep abreast of all that life-saving, you know, new advances.
So, like, what works today might not necessarily be what we're going to do 2 years from now. Right. The textbooks that we learn from are 5 years old by the time that they're printed and when we have them in our hands. Medical journals are 2 years out already. The best thing that we have is free online access to medical information, mm-hmm. FOMED, just to keep us abreast of what's coming and what we can look forward to in the future and where EMS medicine is going to go. But I really think it's the science behind the medical treatments that we provide and then what we can do in the field which is driving the higher standards. And people expect professionals at their door.
We want someone
who's trained and to the utmost trained. I mean, and a lot of people in Wisconsin, they don't know the difference between who's showing up at their door, if it's an EMR, if it's a paramedic. I mean, nobody knows the difference, to be honest, between an EMT and a paramedic if you don't work in this field.
Right. You know, we've been talking a lot about how EMS has changed and, you know, how standards have been changing for people who, you know, work in emergency medical services. But I want to take a moment to talk about how maybe the circumstances have changed for people who work in this field. You know, Kirk, I wonder, you know, do you see the changes in the communities that rural EMS is serving? You know, how are those influencing the, you know, the actual workers?
Like they've touched on, you know, with the medical science and the dedication and, of the responders, and as they learn more and more things, and as medicine itself evolves, they're starting to see there's really minimal things that scientifically have been proven to make a great outcome and difference in the patient's outcome. And can we use that to help those responders become comfortable and start to think out of the box as we come up with new solutions? I'm a paramedic, have been since a long time ago, started out as a first responder EMR. For the most part, probably 99% of what I do, I can do under my first responder license. And those are the key skills that are truly going to make a difference in that patient. And if we can help them deal with the fact that, okay, maybe an ambulance isn't going to show up quite as fast as you are used to it, but maybe that first responder is going to show up and they're going to have their own AED, they're going to have their own tourniquets, they're going to be able to provide the 10 life-saving things that really have been proven to make a difference, and then work through that until an ambulance shows up, maybe from a neighboring community. I think we start to change the conversation and where we're going with the rural EMS shortage and how we continue to provide that same level of care throughout the state, because it doesn't matter whether you are in rural America or you are in metropolitan America, the responders all have the same needs and desires, and that is to provide the best possible patient care and outcome for their neighbors.
And Tom, I wondered though if you have thoughts on how, you know, bigger societal issues, things like the opioid epidemic, you know, and problems with addiction we have in our state, things like our aging population in rural areas, how are those also, you know, playing a part in the future of EMS?
Kind of twofold on two different directions. One, it's affecting our responders. Like Kirk and I have so brazenly bragged about how long we've been doing this, we're also starting to think about the end of this, and so are a lot of responders that have been doing it. EMS started here in 1970 with the first ambulances in Rusk County. I have a few responders that started with it, so they're really looking to get out of it, and I don't have the younger people to replace them with. On the other hand, on the patient side, here in Rusk County, between 60 and 70% of our patients are 65 and over. So that currently is our biggest taxing on our system, is the amount of patients we have in that age group plus how those bills get paid. So Medicare, Medicaid, supplements, things like that, and the percentage they don't pay, that's what the communities are dealing with. And I think to agree with everybody else on the program here, I think the EMS personnel are very well trained in our state, and rightfully so. Now we need to reach out and educate elected officials and the citizens on what it takes to keep that kind of system going, because it all costs money.
Tom Hall, Rusk County's Emergency Management and Ambulance Director, is here with us today to talk about regional emergency medical services in light of Rural Health Day this week. Also joining us are Kirk Gunderson from the Wisconsin EMS Association, Shali Pittman, Communications Coordinator for the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health, and Amanda Bates, Education Director for the Wisconsin EMS Association. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on the future of rural EMS in western Wisconsin. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're taking a look at the challenges facing emergency medical services in western Wisconsin in light of Rural Health Day this week. With fewer workers and volunteers and growing funding challenges, leaders in the EMS community have been coming together to find ways to continue these important services for rural communities. Joining us now to talk about the issue are Shali Pittman, Communications Coordinator for the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health, Amanda Bates, Education Director for the Wisconsin EMS Association, Tom Hall, Rusk County's Emergency Management and Ambulance Director, and Kirk Gunderson, a paramedic from Osseo and president of the Wisconsin EMS Association. So we've been talking a lot about how EMS around the state has been having a hard time attracting and maintaining volunteers and workers. And, you know, I wonder, Kirk, if you could talk about who the average volunteer or the average, worker in this field is. You know, what does that typically look like?
Well, as Tom alluded to, currently it's Tom and I who are getting up in our years and have been doing this a long time. And it could be anybody. It could be your neighbor down the street, young, old. Unfortunately, that population is aging right along with the general population, and there's not as many people coming into the pipeline to replace those of us that are currently responding on a volunteer basis. And the other struggle that we have is those that, when this all started in EMS became as a volunteer service, they were coming from single income households, and now both parties are working outside of the home. They may or may not have the ability to leave their jobs. When they do get home, they've got their kids that want their attention. They got ball games, they've got Cub Scouts, they've got Girl Scouts, whatever it may be to do. And the ability for them to devote that time to volunteer and cover that service 24/7 is getting tougher and tougher. And we just don't have the people coming in on the backside to replace those of us that are getting up there in years.
Tom, I wonder if you could talk about your experience with, attracting new people to Rusk County's, services. Has that been a challenge?
Yeah, it's always a challenge. We try to pay at least half of the cost up front. We have some other groups within the county, volunteer groups that help students help pay for the course or the testing also, along with my current EMTs and their little individual groups, they try to donate. So we try to make it not such a burden on those people financially. But again, we can't help with the time, that they're not getting paid to sit there. They're away from their family and things like that. So that's a big issue. I can't replace people as fast as I can lose them. I mean, it doesn't take much. You know, you get one big event with the children involved or whatever, shootings like you see around the country, you can lose half your staff in one event. We've been lucky here. We haven't had a lot of those, but it does happen. And I feel sorry for those services that have to try to build back up after that because it's really tough.
Wow. So you're saying that, you know, sometimes if volunteers are faced with something, you know, really hard, like something like a shooting, like you mentioned, that can actually cause people to stop volunteering.
Absolutely. And I mean, the support for EMS when I started was pretty non-existent. Now, you know, with the PTSD and other things being realized in EMS, it's more of a workman's comp issue. And we have a good support system in place to take care of our people, to try to keep them in the workforce.
Sholly, has this been an issue that you, the Office of Rural Health, has been looking at, you know, making sure that there are these support systems for EMS workers or volunteers when they are faced with a tough situation?
You know, that was actually not one of the main concerns that I heard just sitting in on these listening sessions. I'm happy to turn that question over to Amanda, though, who has lived experience as well as a paramedic.
Yeah, Amanda. Yeah,
thank you. There was a new term coined recently called post-traumatic stress injury, and I have heard that flying around now for a little bit. What that means, basically, people in EMS have a hard time wanting to look like they were affected by a situation, so they bury it. And it comes out in other ways, in other forms, at other times. What we need to do as a community as a whole, from the experiences that we have in our life and what we have seen on the streets and the calls that we run and the hands that we've held at their most critical time of need, we need to be more open about it. We cannot continue to just put either a smile or a smirk on her face and take that black humor back and just deal with it. That's not working for a lot of people anymore. We see a lot of burnout at younger ages. We see now people who don't want to come into this field because they don't want to be, they don't think that they can handle something like that. They recognize that within themselves. The fact is that yes, you can, but you have to be open and honest and you have to talk about it. And the services that you work for need to recognize and they need to be open and honest and they need to provide services. Whether that be an on-site chaplain or debriefing, they need to have something in place that after a critical response incident, they use those tools and resources at their department for their people, for the benefit of their people.
And one, just jumping back in here, one thing I do remember hearing was that EMS, it's a bit of a different situation than, let's say, firefighting. You see a fire, right, and everybody sees the firefighters put out the fire, and, you know, you can all talk about it at the, you know, bar or the grocery store. Or,
yeah,
you can talk about, you know, that event. It's harder with EMS because there are all sorts of HIPAA laws and privacy laws and confidentiality that you can't even say you were there, you know, sometimes. And it's a lot harder to talk about because you have to also respect the privacy rights of the patient. So that is one specific issue that we did hear raised a couple times.
Sure. People want to know, did what I do make a difference?
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know, then you don't have closure for that.
Obviously, this emotional toll, yeah, that can definitely have a role in burnout. And I wonder, Kirk, though, if simply being understaffed, if that can have a role in higher burnout rates among EMS volunteers or workers.
Oh, absolutely, Hope. You know, when people are fully staffed and you are able to say, hey, I got my son's baseball game tonight, so I can't cover, but then someone else will take their call, that's certainly going to help. But if all of a sudden it's only Tom and I to cover the next 72 hours, or when that pager goes off, nobody's going to respond, it becomes a greater emotional toll. It's like, well, am I going to say sorry to my son who wants me to go to his school event, or am I going to answer that page and hope that he thinks in the long term that really Dad was doing something for the greater good to help his neighbors, and or am I just going to say, you know, I'm just done. Here's my pager, Tom. I'm not playing this game anymore. I'm just going to be at home with my family. And it causes, being understaffed makes it a huge challenge of keeping people engaged and willing to say yes.
And so, you know, what kind of solutions have we seen around the state in making sure that services don't get to the point where they're understaffed, that we're seeing that kind of burnout, Kirk? I wonder if there are, I don't know, if there have been any unique or, you know, new solutions to this issue.
Well, I think, you know, a couple of things in two of the areas that I support in Western Wisconsin for the Mayo Clinic in areas that we cover, we have, and kudos to these two services that are doing this, we have coverage agreements in place with these volunteer services that surround us. I currently work for a paid 24-hour-7 career service where we staff all paramedics and EMTs, where our crews are paid to be there for 12-hour shifts. What we have the ability to do and what we've worked out agreements to provide service to our neighbors and other services that are volunteer around us is they notify, say, hey, guys, we're out of service for the next 24, 36, 72 hours or 12 hours where we can't staff our truck today. And kudos to those service directors to say, time out. I'm not going to push it anymore. I know if I call Tom, he'll say yes, and he'll cover this shift, but that'll put Tom on for the fifth day in a row. And so then when that 911 call comes into that service area, we automatically get paged out and we respond in. Very similar to a service that goes to the south of one of my bases. And they're on 24/7. If they don't answer that page within X time frame that they've set with the 911 center, the 911 center automatically turns the call over, and then we respond in and we take care of that call. Provides them the ability to keep hometown ambulance hometown as long as we can, utilize those resources, but understand that we're going to come, it's going to be a little bit further away. It's going to take us a little bit longer for us to get there, but it does help lessen that strain on those people, on those few people that are left to cover that hometown service.
Kirk Gunderson, a paramedic from Osseo and president of the Wisconsin EMS Association, is here with us today to talk about the future of rural emergency services. He's joined by Shali Pittman from the State Office of Rural Health, Amanda Bates from the Wisconsin EMS Association, and Tom Hall, emergency management and ambulance director in Rusk County. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. As a lot of people here today have mentioned, you know, all of these services require funding. And, you know, I wonder, Tom, if you can just, you know, provide a look into how your service is funded. You know, where are those, what are those sources, and how have maybe those changed over the years?
Well, years ago, our service was able to survive on bill and pay. So what they billed, they got paid a high percentage, and they were able to keep operating that way. That hasn't been the same since some rule changes in Medicare and Medicaid years ago, where they don't pay the same rates anymore. So now, because we're countywide, it goes on to the county tax levy, which gets spread out, of course, across countywide because we are a county service. What we're looking at now is moving that over the tax levy to get it off of that, so there's not that it doesn't affect the county's tax cap as high as they can go. The real exciting thing right now, and when I hear Kirk talk, is and the new EMS Professionals magazine is flexible staffing. What that could mean for us is if I could staff a paramedic and an EMT today with the operational plan with the state and everything else, I could staff that way. And then tomorrow, if I could only muster a advanced crew, I would staff with that. And maybe Friday or Saturday, I can only staff with a basic crew. That's what I would staff with. So that's really exciting for us here, looking at getting a higher staffing level that we don't have to provide 24/7, 365, but when we can, which is kind of what Kirk was talking about, even with that assistance agreements to your neighboring services.
Yeah, Shali, I wonder if, you know, these sources of funding, if that was something you guys heard in these listening sessions you held.
Absolutely. Funding, along with, you know, dwindling volunteerism and staffing issues, those were pretty much the big 3 points. And so just to echo a little bit of what Tom said, rural areas have high Medicare and Medicaid markets, but that means low reimbursements for ambulance services, and that also means a difficult billing process. It's kind of a long and tortured billing process with Medicare and Medicaid. Billing services can help, but then that reduces the overall income to EMS services. People are always surprised, it seems like, that how little EMS services usually get from funding from taxpayers. I don't have all the numbers in front of me, but anecdotal numbers is like really not a lot at all. Way less than you would probably be willing to pay to have two individuals show up at your door. And save the lives of you and your loved ones. But, you know, we do fund essential services. We fund police forces. We fund waste collectors. But funding EMS is a little bit more tricky. Municipalities have kind of gotten away with a sweet deal right now, because EMS, which is largely volunteer, you don't have to pay those volunteers. And, you know, volunteers have just given so much of themselves. And it kind of become, you know, and they're also expected to be medical professionals, that you're kind of nearing the end of a system where you're asking so much of these volunteers and not paying them, but they're, you know, and they're sacrificing a lot. So we do fund essential services, and, you know, EMS, you know, showing up at your door, that's an essential service. So municipalities are kind of in a bind, because if they want to fund EMS, there are tax caps on how much you can tax. They're called levy limits. So if you want to fund an EMS service add funding, then you kind of have to take away something else that's critical in your budget. You know, no one really likes the idea of taking away from a park or fixing roads, you know, so that's an issue. There are other ways and solutions to better fund EMS, but they're also subject to their own kind of issues. One example is a countywide service. Another example is setting up EMS and fire districts, but, you know, like I said, they come with their own issues specific to geography and kind of each service's situation. You have to get everyone on board to do so. You have to consolidate, and I don't know if you've heard, but rural areas are large geographic expanses, so that can be a lot of area to cover if you do consolidate a lot of areas at once. So, there are solutions. They're still working them out, but funding was definitely a very large component. Difficulty acquiring funding was a large component of these listening sessions.
A radical idea would just be to have EMS an essential service.
Right. That would be a radical idea, Amanda.
Yeah, and Amanda, I mean, how close do you think we are to that reality?
Short answer? Not close. I think maybe Kirk could fill us in.
Yeah, Kirk, what are your thoughts on this issue?
Certainly, I got some figures that, you know, for your listeners. That, first of all, it's really, in grand scheme of things, it's a wording change to change EMS to an essential service. You know, if you look at the Department of Labor statistics and you look at the value of what an EMT, a volunteer EMT, is, in the state of Wisconsin, that with their hourly wages and their payment and benefits, it comes out to between $24 to $26 an hour. If you take that times 2, times 24, times 365 days a year, and you look at just one of those four services that Tom has in Russ County, that's saving the taxpayers of Russ County $438,000 a year that they're not able to recoup, because EMS currently is not considered an essential service in the state of Wisconsin. You know, it is certainly something that WMSA is going to continue to lead the charge on and take up on an even heavier battle in 2019, but it is going to create some hairs to stand up on people's back of their necks, because it does potentially allow for a tax increase in the state of Wisconsin for municipalities to say, hey, we want these four ambulance services in Rusk County. We want these four bases, and we're going to have to pay for them, and here's how we're going to do it. If we make it an essential service, it no longer is restricted by that levy.
We've been talking with Kirk Gunderson, a paramedic from Osseo and the president of the Wisconsin EMS Association, Shelley Pittman, communications coordinator for the Wisconsin Office of Rural Health, Amanda Bates, education director for the Wisconsin EMS Association, and Tom Hall, Rusk County Emergency Management and Ambulance Director, about the challenges facing rural emergency medical services in Wisconsin. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and our senior news editor and producer is John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at WPR.org/newsmakers. Our site has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you can find links to our producers and staff. That and more at WPR.org/newsmakers.